Bibles to Matthew 21, verse 33, and we're going to talk about another parable. I just want you to remind you of the things that we need to be reminded of and the lessons that are taught in parables. I like them because there's a certain amount of mystery in a parable, isn't it? And you try to figure out what everything that it means, but I'm telling you that the Israelites understood what these parables meant. This is the parable of the landowner. And Christ had just ridden into, this was his last week before his crucifixion. And he had just ridden into Jerusalem. He had gone into the temple and he had driven out the money changers. And he began to teach in the temple. And in verse 23, before we get to the parable, it says, when he entered the temple, the chief priests and the elders of the people came to him while he was teaching and said, by what authority are you doing these things? Who gave you this authority? Jesus said unto them, I will also ask you one thing, which if you tell me, I will also tell you by what authority I do these things. And the question he asked him, he said, the baptism of John was from what source, from heaven or from men? They began reasoning among themselves, saying, if you say from heaven, he will say to us, then why did you not believe him? But if we say from men, we fear the people, for they all regard John as a prophet. And answering Jesus, they said, we do not know. He also said to them, neither will I tell you by what authority I do these things. I go through that to show you just exactly how Christ convicted people. You convict people by asking questions, don't you? I never told an employee what they ought to be doing. I asked them questions about what they needed to do to accomplish what we needed to do. Because then that's their commitment, you see. And this is the same thing that Christ did. He convicted these chief priests and the elders about who John was. And of course he was a prophet. And another thing, at the end of the parable of the landowner, the very last verse, it says, when they sought to seize him, they feared the people because they considered him to be a prophet. We were in Jerusalem back in 1972. We had a Jewish guy, and he was taking us through Jerusalem, and he took us through every detailed step of the crucifixion of Christ, and he was very passionate about it. And when he got through, I asked him, I said, who do you think Christ was? What do you think his answer was? Is a good prophet. That's all. He's just a good prophet. Okay, let's look at verse 33. So we're speaking, he's speaking to the chief priests and the elders and other Israelites in the temple. This is the second of three parables just before his crucifixion. He says, listen to another parable. This is verse 33, chapter 21 of Matthew. There was a landowner who planted a vineyard and put a wall around it and dug wine press in it, built a tower and rented it out to vine growers and went on a journey. When the harvest time approached, he sent his slaves to the vine growers to receive his produce. The vine growers took his slaves and beat one and killed another and stoned a third. Again, he sent another group of slaves, larger than the first, and they did the same thing to them. But afterward, he sent his son to them, saying, "They will respect my son." But when the vine growers saw the son, they said among themselves, "This is the heir. Come, let us kill him and seize his inheritance." They took him and threw him out of the vineyard and killed him. Therefore, when the owner of the vineyard comes, what will he do to those vine growers? This is what Christ says. And again, he asked a question. What will they do to these vine growers that had killed the son of the landowner? They said unto him, "He will bring those wretches to a wretched end, and will rent out the vineyard to other vine growers who will pay him the proceeds of the proper seasons." We'll stop right there, and then we will finish the parable in just a few minutes. Do you think they understood this parable? If you look back in Isaiah, the 5th chapter, this parable is told. And if anybody knew what this parable meant, these priests and elders knew exactly what it meant, because it says back in Isaiah, the 5th chapter, the 1st verse through the 7th verse, it says, "Let me sing now for my well-beloved, I saw a song of my beloved concerning his vineyard. My well-beloved had a vineyard in a fertile hill. He dug it all around, but removed its stones and planted it with choicest vine. He built a tower in the middle of it and also hewed out a wine vat in it. Then he expected it to produce good grapes, but it produced only worthless ones. Now, inhabitants of Jerusalem and men of Judea, judge between me and my vineyard. What more was there to do for my vineyard that I have not done to it?" And he goes on and talk about the worthless vineyard keepers. But this was common practice of landowners in Jerusalem and Israel. Those who owned the land, who normally produced grapes, they would partition it off, either with a thorn fence or a rock fence, and they would rent it out to those who would plant the vines or the grape vines and raise the grapes, or produce the grapes and then produce the wine. What's that called in our day? It's sharecropping. In other words, when they rented this out, they expected that when the crop was produced, when the grapes and juice were produced, that the owner of the land would get their portion of the product. And then the husbandman, or the one who planted the grapes and produced the juice, got their share. But what did these husbandmen do when the landowner came back and sent his slaves over to receive his part of the product? What did he do, Carl?
What did the grower do?
What did the husbandman do that produced the crop?
What did he share the crop? Now, whatever, how did he split it? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, he actually, it says here that he beat one, and he killed another, and he stoned the third.
Oh, in this story.
Okay.
If he did it right.
Okay. But who was the producer or the husbandman of this crop? Who did that represent? Pardon? The Israelites, right? They were Israelites. And the wine or the grape juice, what did that represent?
Their obedience,
their honor to God, their reverence to God, their worship to God. And so what had happened over the years with the Israelites and God? All right, the Israelites what? All right, over and over again, they gave up on God, didn't they? They denied God. They began to worship idols, worship in high places. And just over and over again, that God was very patient with them. And but they denied God, and they fell down in their honor to God. So they didn't share with God the landowner. God here is represented as the landowner. They didn't share the product with him, did they? All right, what do you think the fence represented around the vineyard? What did that represent? Pardon?
The exclusivity of Israel as being God's children.
All right, that was God's protection over his people, wasn't it? And probably in this case, at this time, it represented maybe Jerusalem and the wall around Jerusalem and the worship place in which God was present. And the tower represented where the dwelling place of God, you see. All right, in verse 35, it said, the vine growers took his slaves and beat one and killed another and stoned a third. All right, who were these slaves? Who does that represent? Anybody?
Prophets.
God had sent prophet after prophet trying to tell the people what God was going to do if they did not submit to him and obey him and act like his people. So the slave was his prophets, and it says they beat one and he killed another and they stoned the third. In verse 36, again, he sent another group of slaves larger than the first. And what did he do to them? The same thing. Just over and over, the prophets were rejected. But then he sent his son. Why did he send his son? The landowner sent his son. Okay,
he comes with the authority and the position.
All right, he came by the authority of the landowner. Surely they would respect him. That's what the landowner expected. And who does this son represent?
Jesus
Christ. Now he's convicting them that they are going to kill his son, Christ. And this was the last week before his death, before they did crucify him. In verse 38, it says, when the vine growers saw the son, they said among themselves, this is the heir. Come, let us kill him and seize his inheritance. And what was his inheritance? His church, his people, his followers. In their subjection to him, their obedience to him. And that's what that represents. Any other comment about that? And they took him and they threw him out of the vineyard and killed him. Therefore, when the owner of the vineyard comes, Christ says, what will he do to those vine growers? They said to him, he will bring these wretches to a wretched end and will rent out the vineyard to other vine growers who will pay him the proceeds of the proper seasons. What on earth does that mean, John? All right, who else would that be?
The Gentiles.
The Gentiles. And those Gentiles who would obey him, and even those Israelites that would obey him. Wonder why Peter didn't understand that at this point.
Well, in this case, I'm not sure that...
Because he didn't want to accept the Gentiles at first, did he? But these people understood exactly what Christ was what God was telling them, didn't he? Or Christ was telling them, didn't he? Of course, they didn't understand that Jesus was the Son of God, that he was divine. It goes on to say that they thought he was just a good prophet.
But in the very next verse is when Jesus is basically bringing the point home as to what was going to happen then that fit right in with the entire analogy that he's provided with this parable. I think that's when the Pharisees finally, the light bulb went off. I think that it was kind of slow going.
Yeah.
I don't think up to that point in time they really realized that.
They had read it in Scripture, but they still didn't know what. They didn't take Christ as the Son of God, as divine. They still didn't take that. But they understood that Christ, the Son of God, would come, but they just didn't think that Christ was that being. That light bulb had never come on. And it didn't come on at this time. Why do I think that?
They would have never killed him.
Pardon?
If they wouldn't have killed him, they would have liked all of
it. They went ahead and sought to kill him, didn't they? They went ahead and sought to kill him. Any other comment about that?
will enter into the kingdom of heaven before you do. So, and, you know, he wasn't nice to them. He did take off the butt part of it here and hit it pretty hard. So, I mean, he attacked their position.
Well, he wasn't nice to the money changers, so
right.
He was angry about that. All right, then he go ahead and Jesus said in them, did you never read in the scriptures the stone which the builders rejected? This became the chief cornerstone. This came about from the Lord, and it is marvelous in your eyes. Don't you remember this? He's saying to these chief priests and leaders. They had heard it. They had read it. If you'll turn back to Psalms, the 118th chapter, down to the 22nd verse. It says, the stone which the builder rejected has become the chief cornerstone. This is the Lord doing, the Lord's doing. It is marvelous in our eyes. This is the day which the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. So they knew that the one that was to come to save them was the chief cornerstone. And that was the Son of God. And he says to them, don't you remember this? Now, what is a cornerstone in a building? How important is it? What importance is it?
For all the other stones are set off of that one stone.
All right, all the stones are set off of that one stone, isn't it? And that's the most important stone. And all of the Israelites should have been part of that building, and Christ was the chief cornerstone of that building. But he goes on to say, therefore I say to you, the kingdom of God will be taken away from you and given to the people producing the fruit of it. And he who falls on this stone will be broken to pieces. He who stumbles or he who falls and does not consider Christ and put their faith on him will fall to pieces and scatter like dust. Does that apply to us today? Pat?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Anybody that doesn't accept Christ and doesn't accept them as a chief part of their thought process and their faith, they will be scattered like this. What other comment can you make about that? And they must produce fruit. What is the fruit of the Spirit? You remember that? Turn over to Galatians, the 5th chapter, the 22nd verse. Says, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such thing there is no law. This is the fruit of the Spirit and the fruit that God expects of us. And if we don't produce this, what he's saying here, we'll be like a part of the building of a stone that will be scattered or shattered to dust. And these are all the principles, of course, that Christ represented. And that's why we hear in many prayers, let it help us to be more like Christ, more loving, more joyful, more peaceable, more patient, more kind, and more good, more faithful, because these are the right things to be done.
Dave?
Yeah.
I think, I can't think down the scripture back up exactly what I'm trying to say, but I think the chief priests and a lot of Pharisees understood Jesus better than the apostles, the ones that would become apostles, the disciples. I think they understood it. I think at this point they had already decided they were going to kill this man. They did not want to give up their possession, and I think they understood exactly what he was talking about. This passage was quoted from Psalms. There's a passage similar to it in Isaiah, talking about, you know, what's going to happen to Israel. You know, they made pacts with other countries to protect them and all of this. And he said, it's not going to do you any good.
Well, evidently they didn't feel like he was the son of God. Or they wouldn't have proceeded to try to kill him, would they? John?
Well, that's kind of the problem. That's the reason for it was that they wouldn't understand. And I don't know exactly what they understood, but it wasn't what Jesus intended to do. For. You know, they didn't understand Jesus. And we know that the apostles just wouldn't understand Jesus after his resurrection. And that's why he spoke in parables, is to, you know, if you go back to Matthew 13 there, he explains exactly what parables are for. You know, he says, see and they won't see, and hear and they won't hear. And their hearts must become dull, you know. So it was just his way of, for whatever reason, there was only a few going to understand.
But these Jewish leaders, they saw him ride into Jerusalem on a donkey, didn't they? And as he rode in on that donkey, there were people on the side of the street asking him to restore their sight and to restore their lameness. And he stopped and had passion on them and did that. They saw that.
Well, they all saw that. I mean, he has done many miracles. They believed in his miracles, but what they didn't understand was his purpose for doing those miracles. They didn't understand his death. They didn't understand it until his resurrection. And really, until the day of Pentecost, there's no full understanding of what this purpose is there.
No, it's no doubt that they didn't fully understand, because they still thought that the Christ was come and set up an earthly kingdom and all of that. And Christ kept telling them this is not what the kingdom was all about. But they couldn't fathom that. And probably we wouldn't have fathomed that at that time.
Dad, you know, speaking earlier about having the vineyard and not wanting to give it back to this heir. You know, there's so much that's written about these Pharisees and Abraham's seed and in the temple and their status and their respect among the people. Just to give it back, you know, it's clear that they did not want to surrender to this Jesus God. They did not want to surrender their status. If you go back to the fact that they see the Pharisees standing and saw Lazarus raised from the dead, and still they wanted to kill him. Now, you can't conceive that human beings to be that stupid or that stubborn or that blind. And to me, the only thing that makes sense is they would not release the vineyard. They didn't want to give up their status. They were so blinded by holding the vineyard. We are the Pharisees. We are the people. We are
the chosen people.
We the leaders of the Jews, and you, Jesus, want us to give this up? What do you want us to give this up for? They were blinded by hanging on to that vineyard. They were so blinded, they couldn't see Jesus. They just couldn't understand who he was.
Do we ever get that way today? Do we ever get blinded toward things? All the time, don't we? We even get blinded to our own actions. And sometimes those actions are not right, and we ignore them. We get blinded. a lot more than that. The producing the fruit of the vineyard is all of those things I read off in Galatians, 5th chapter. Plus, spreading the gospel. Plus, taking care of those who have a number who needs to be taken care of.
Isn't that what we know of the Pharisees, though? That they were keepers of the law. That, you know, they understood the law and they kept it and they enforced it. Too far. They created law where there was no law, just so they wouldn't get close to infringing upon the law. How are we to learn from this against them? You know, in Isaac's point, where they were so afraid to lose the vineyard. So afraid to lose the land, which the power, the authority. How do we, you know, find ourselves in the same situation where we feel like we're in the right and we're going to say a higher class Christian than those who all they need is some teaching or some compassion if we've got our own fence.
Did we ever get accused of being too legalistic? As the Jews were accused of that, absolutely, all the time. Too legalistic, not doing the kinds of things that I read off in Galatians 5:22. All right. In verse 45, it says, when the chief priest and the Pharisees heard his parable, they understood that he was speaking about them. That they weren't building on the cornerstone. That they were the one that was crucifying the Son of God. But they didn't understand exactly what that meant. And they were so hard-hearted that they wouldn't listen. And I think that is the big issue here. They had made up their mind what they were going to do, and their mind was so intent on crucifying Christ that they couldn't open their mind up enough to know what Christ was saying here in this parable. Is that possible, John?
Yes, I think that's the point of it. They become their, you know, it doesn't matter what they heard or what they saw, they wouldn't go believe anything. That's why he uses the parables there. The heart was already dull anyway. And there was no reason.
Yeah. Kind of like the Pharaoh, wasn't it? He didn't want to listen. This is where a lot of people are. They just don't want to listen. It doesn't fit in with their agenda. And then in verse 46, when they sought to seize him, they feared the people because they considered him to be a prophet. Who considered him to be a prophet?
People.
The people. And so the chief priest didn't want to seize him at that particular time because they were afraid of the people. But even the people didn't consider Christ divine or didn't consider him evident the Son of God that heard this, a lot of them that heard this particular parable.
Well, that goes back to the perception. It goes back to what every Jew that had not witnessed all of the evidences produced by Jesus and those that were disciples that followed him, even some of them didn't really get it. But the Pharisees and the scribes, they were the guardians of the law, and the people would have gone to them for teaching. So if the teachers already had this perception that the Messiah was going to be a militaristic leader that was going to establish an earthly kingdom and throw off the bonds of Roman rule, then the majority of the people would have bought causing was not this over-the-top, larger-than-life military leader like David. So it really isn't that surprising that this verse points out that people consider him to be a prophet, and they didn't get the other part of this because their own leaders did.
What's the lesson that they learned? Lessons they learned from this? Anybody? How do we crucify Christ today? By sinning, we crucify Christ all over again. We don't build on the chief cornerstone, do we?
We think that Christ died for the sins of the world. That's what we look at. Instead of saying he died for my sin, we need to make it more personal. Not that one's not wrong, or not that one's wrong, but if we look at it more personal, my sin.
What else? What else do we learn? What other lesson do we learn from that? What's going to happen if we don't produce fruit for it?
Just like the vine growers, we'll be tossed out of the garden.
Absolutely.
In this case, since his kingdom has been established,
he pitched out of the kingdom.
Where else are we to go except for eternal punishment? Because the garden, the true garden, will be in its perfected state when Christ comes again. So if we do not stand as a worker in his vineyard, then when we are thrown out, it's not just a matter of enduring suffering on this earth. It's going to be complete exclusion from the final perfected kingdom, and we have only one destination.
And also, anyone that doesn't build their faith on Christ, the chief cornerstone, what's going to happen to them?
They're going to be crushed by the
stone. Crushed to dust. And I think that's the lesson to be learned from this. Thank you very much.